Blog Talk Radio.
The Senate will come to order.
Are you ready?
Yeah!
I want to know if everybody ready.
Yeah!
All right, here we go. Everybody, get on up and do your stuff. Did you hear what I say? I said everybody, get on up and do your stuff. You better get up.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Congress College. I just want to let you know that is Perk Badger, Do Your Stuff, and man, do I love that tune. I love that song because that's what we do on Congress College. We do our stuff. We talk about Congress. That's right. Congress College talks about Congress twice weekly. I'll be your host for the next 30 minutes. My name is Elizabeth Crist, and thank you in advance for spending your Friday with me. Let me tell you a little bit about Congress College if you haven't heard about it. We talk about Congress twice weekly from the standpoint of what actually the Senate and the House of Representatives are up to. And on the Friday show, which is, of course, the show we're listening to now, this is when we recap the week and we talk about literally what happened. What did the Senate do? What did the House of Representatives end up doing? Did they stay and do what they said they were going to do? You know, I do the show twice weekly, so you can answer this really, really simple question. Were you represented well in Washington, D.C. for the week? I say this all the time. We have the greatest representative government in the world. I mean it, bar none. But it's got a lot of warts right now. It's got a lot of problems right now. But, you know, we can't fix them if we don't even know what they're up to. We can't expect the greatest representative government in the world to be that if we don't pay attention to what they're up to. So I appreciate folks that listen to Congress College. Hey, John. Hey, Bob. I hope you're having I hope you're not having technical issues. Thanks for tuning in. And thanks to everybody that tunes in and listens to it later. I also do the show so folks can familiarize themselves with the free website, gradegov.com. And, of course, GradeGov lets you grade a member of Congress. How about your member of Congress? If you could grade him or her, what would you give him? Would you give him an A? Would you give him a D or an F? That's what you get to do on gradegov.com. And I say this often, too. Members of Congress do look at the site because they're always worried about what you and I are thinking about them. So what better way for them to figure out how we think about them, what we think about them, than to pop over to gradegov.com and they check their grade and they can also look at the letters that you write to them. So tell your friends and family, if you would, about gradegov.com. I would greatly appreciate it. Man, do we have a lot to talk about today. We're going to start out in the Senate of the United States. They finally passed the first appropriations bill. This is the Energy and Water Appropriations Bill. This keeps our waterways safe, our nuclear power plants safe. It's got a $35 billion price tag. It's the first of those 12 appropriations bills that I love seeing the House and the Senate calling up and debating and amending and passing individually. That's the magic word here, individually. They do them every year, but they since 2009, basically. Since Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid ran the joint, they have been basically putting together giant omnibus appropriations bills, marrying all those bills together so that your member of the House or the Senate doesn't have an opportunity to amend them, to really debate them. I love it when they do them individually, and you're going to understand why in just a minute even more. So the Senate ended up doing the Energy and Water Appropriations Bill. Have you heard about what's going on with the TSA? This is the Homeland Security Agency, our TSA, you know, the TSA officers, Transportation Safety Administration. That falls under the purview, underneath the direction of the Department of Homeland Security. And, of course, that department secretary's name is Jay Johnson. He said in a Friday news conference that he has an aggressive plan to deal with the increased security line waits at U.S. airports. And then he said this. I am not kidding you, folks. He said this. Facing long hours, long TSA check lines at airports, travelers are getting upset. And he said part of the problem is the political rallies. It's a code for Donald Trump, his big political rallies. He has so many people showing up that they use TSA agents to screen people. Really? Secretary Johnson, that's the best you can do, is to blame it on Donald Trump. Not your organization, not your agency, not any of that. It's you're blaming it on Donald Trump. They say some of the long hours in the last several weeks have been 2 and 3 hours long. People get to the airport 2 hours in advance of their flight and they miss it because they sit in a TSA line. So he says he's got this big, aggressive plan to reduce wait times. Well, the Homeland Security Appropriations Bill hasn't been called up in the Senate. It hasn't been called up in the House of Representatives. So aren't you eager to see that thing called up? Aren't you eager to see that bill on the Senate floor or the House floor and have a member of the House or the Senate say, what's up with the TSA? Cut the funding unless they can get their act together. Give them more money if they claim that's what they need to get their act together. I would not vote for giving them more money, but that's probably what they're going to end up saying they need is more money because they need more boots on the ground. Here's another one. We're going to talk about this a little bit later. Well, we'll get into it in just a second. But another issue is the transgender bathroom issue. I'm not kidding you. The White House issued guidelines from the Department of Education and the Department of Justice on what exactly public schools should do about this. Well, here's another one, folks. The Department of Education is included in the Health, Education, and Labor Appropriations Bill. That bill hasn't been called up on the Senate floor. That bill hasn't been called up on the House floor. The ranking minority member is Senator Patty Murray. She's a Democrat from Washington State. She's up for re-election. So she's going to have to manage the bill on the floor. John Krupe remembers that when the Democratic manager and the Republican manager sit at the two leaders' desks and they organize amendments coming up in the flow of the bill and all of that. Patty Murray will be the Democratic manager. She's up for re-election. Don't you think there might be an amendment dealing with the bathroom issue on the Health, Education, and Labor Appropriations Bill? That's why it's important, folks, to have these bills done one at a time on the Senate floor, one at a time on the House floor. We're going to talk a little bit more about the bathroom issue in a second. Let me flip over to the House of Representatives. This week, they passed a number of bipartisan bills dealing with opiate addiction. One of them was called OPEN, the Opiate Program Evaluation Act. And it basically requires the Attorney General and the Secretary of HHS to develop matrix so that opiate-related grant programs are given out and they're utilized to the best possible way. Also, we're getting close in Congress to have to do something with Puerto Rico. They are fixing to default on $422 million worth of debt unless Congress does something. They're set to default on $2 billion of that beginning in July. So negotiations are going on. Just know that that is going on behind the scenes. So before the end of the summer, you'll have something with Puerto Rico. Do we fully bail them out? Do we have them restructure? I don't know. All right, I mentioned that we were going to talk about the bathroom issue. Here, take a listen to this. This is a clip on the White House dealing with public schools in the bathrooms. transgender bathrooms. Here you go.
Well, Bruce, over in the U.S., the battle, too, has intensified over transgender restroom use in schools in the U.S., and now the White House says it has issued guidelines.
Exactly. What the White House plans to do, the Obama administration, is going to tell every public school district in the United States to allow transgender students to use the bathrooms that match their gender identity. This move comes as the Obama administration and North Carolina battle in federal court over a state law passed in March, which limits public bathroom access for transgender people.
Some of you have lived freely for decades, and others of you are still wondering how you can possibly live the lives that you were born to live, to lead.
The letter does not have the force of law, but implicitly threatens lawsuits or possible loss of federal aid for those who don't abide.
So Bruce, essentially, the letter demands that students identifying with a sex, regardless of their birth gender, can use the restroom of their choice.
I think that's what it says. I mean, it says schools have to treat students according to their gender identity without requesting some sort of medical certificate or a birth certificate to prove something.
Right. I mean, recent polling shows that more Americans are in favor of students using restrooms of their biological sex. So it seems like Obama has an uphill battle.
It's going to be interesting to see how they dissect this letter and the language and apply it to different schools. It's a definitely uphill battle.
All right. Well, we'll have to wait and see. Thank you, Bruce, for that.
No problem.
You know, the White House issued guidelines. We're going to talk about, I know that Congress College listeners know how the White House redefines things, makes executive orders, changes regulations just over and over again to get their agenda. This was a joint letter put out by the Department of Education and the Department of Justice. It went to every school. And it basically said transgender students should enjoy a supportive and non-discriminatory school environment. Now, we know why this started out. This came to life, if you will, because of the standoff between the White House and North Carolina. The North Carolina governor slammed this. He called on Congress to address the issue. Then we go back to what we were talking about at the beginning of the segment. They haven't done the labor education appropriations bill. Likely this will be an issue. Like I said, the North Carolina governor, Pat McCrory, said, Congress, where are you? I'm going to read from Governor McCrory's statement here for a second. Most Americans, including this governor, believe that government is searching for a solution to a problem that has yet to be defined. Both in the federal courts and the U.S. Congress must intercede to stop the massive executive branch overreach. Clearly oversteps constitutional authority. Senator Lamar Alexander, he's a Republican from Tennessee, and he's chairman of the HELP Committee. That's Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions. Not the Appropriations Subcommittee, the Authorizing Committee. He said this, quote, this kind of issue that parents, school boards, communities, students, and teachers should be allowed to work out in a practical way with the maximum amount of respect for individuals' rights of all students. Insofar as the federal government goes, it's up to Congress to write the law, not executive departments. That's what he said. You know, the executive branch figured through justice and education said that they found some weird interpretation, again, redefining something under Title IX, the federal anti-discrimination law in education in schools. Something in Title IX allowed them, said they were allowed to do this. Texas Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, he said he accused the administration of blackmail and called the guidance social engineering. Families in America, he went on to say, he did this in a news conference, are not going to accept this. Mississippi Governor Phil Bryant issued a statement today calling the directive outrageous. Quote again, the directive is non-binding and does not carry the force of law. Because these decisions are better left to the states and not made at the point of federal bayonet, Mississippi's public schools should not participate in the president's social experiment. We have 31 Republican governors, folks. I know listeners that are, listen to Congress College often know that. We have 31 Republican governors. If you can't get around an issue and coalesce around an issue, if you can't find common ground on an issue like this, then you 31 Republican governors, heaven help you. Heaven help you. There is going to be more to come to this. This is going to be bouncing around all summer long. And I guarantee you, it will show up in the ballot box. It'll show up in November. Let's go keep talking about the White House for a second. Remember when you could keep your health care if you liked it? Remember you could keep your doctor? Remember that lie President Obama came up with? Well, I believe it's going to haunt them also in the elections. Take a listen to this. This is Politico's lie of the year back in don't remember when this was. A couple of years ago. Take a listen. This is a little more than it's a minute.
The lie of the year. Control room, I don't even know if we have this. Can we get a drum roll? Thank you very much. So here it is, by popular demand, the number one lie of the year based on something the president first said in 2009 and then updated in 2013.
If you like your health care plan, you can keep your health care plan. What we said was you could keep it if it hasn't changed since the law's passed.
So this was the runaway favorite with readers. 59% voted for this as lie of the year.
Yeah, the editors of PolitiFact selected this because it had the most impact on the national debate. It's something we first flagged back in 2009. We said this is partly right. The health care law does leave in place the existing health.
So she's saying it impacted the most people. Well, it impacted almost everybody, almost everyone. We all either got nervous, had our health care canceled, had doctors cancel our health care. I don't know a single person that didn't have some speed bump when it came to Obamacare, dealing with their doctors, their hospital, their clinics, where they get their labs, where they get their – I do not know a single person that did not have a speed bump. And, you know, I don't mean to call it speed trivial way. I mean, we all have illnesses in our family, aging parents, cancer, losing spouses, etc. So Obamacare is not a laughing matter. I believe this is going to be also something that shows up in the elections in November. And you know what? You got the White House folks laughing about it. Take a listen to this. This is under a minute. These are speech writers who put it in initially. Take a listen here.
You're so
okay. No. You may have told me that.
Sorry, by the way.
Oh, that's nice.
Let's try. Sure. But my point is that you have equal impact on serious speeches because it's about style, use of language, etc.
The joke speech is the most fun part of this, but the things I'm the most proud of were the more serious speeches. I think healthcare, economic speeches, and I think
Lovett wrote the line about. If you like your insurance, you can keep it.
How dare you?
Huge impact.
And you know what? It's still true. No.
Yeah.
But,
it was cool to do. They're laughing about it. I think that's despicable. I just think that's despicable. Despicable. All right, let's go over to presidential politics. Is there a bromance brewing between Donald Trump and Paul Ryan? They met on Thursday. The meeting was about 45 minutes long. He also met with Senator McConnell. Take a listen to a little bit. This is Speaker Ryan's press conference on it, and then we're going to talk a little, dissect it just a little bit.
You pledged repeatedly for party unity headed into the fall. A lot of Republican senators and House members say by your decision to withhold your endorsement of Donald Trump actually makes it harder for the party. Are you concerned that by not endorsing Trump, your party is going to have a difficult time?
No, I think actually what we're trying to do is be as constructive as possible to have a real unification. Look, I said this the other day. To pretend we're unified as a party after coming through a very bruising primary, which just ended like a week ago, to pretend we're unified without actually unifying, then we go into the fall at half strength. this election is too important to go into an election at half strength. That means we need a real unification of our party, which, you know, look, after a tough primary, that's going to take some effort. We are committed to putting that effort in. I want to be a part of that unifying process so that we're at full strength this fall so that we can win this election. We cannot afford to lose this election to Hillary Clinton, to pack the Supreme Court, to keep the liberal Obama agenda going. We have to be at full strength so that we can win this election, and that is why we have to go through the actual effort and process of unifying.
Mr. Speaker.
Hallie, from NBC, by the way. You've been very vocal in your differences on policy with Donald Trump. So what is it that you need to hear from him at some point to fully endorse him, and is there a situation in which you can?
Look, I think these are conversations we're going to have. I don't really know him. I met him once in person in 2012. We had a very good conversation in March on the phone. We just need to get to know each other, and we, as a leadership team, are enjoying.
He goes on to say, I don't want to discuss all the things that I need out of Donald Trump, so that he's, I said, basically he goes on to say he's not going to have that kind of discussion with the media. He said that he was encouraged by the meeting. He said that 11 times. My insiders say he set a little bit of an agenda. He gave Trump a little bit of an agenda, some standards, and basically sent Trump on his way to see if he would sort of agree to the standards, if you will. He said he wants to keep making sure that they're operating off of the same core principles. And, of course, that's the Constitution, that's smaller government, that kind of thing. Ryan also talked about executive power and wanted to make sure that Donald Trump understood the executive power, the executive overreach that this president has done, and that, you know, if you become president, that we can't have that. As I said, the core principles they want to agree on are the Constitution, separation of powers, and again, the executive that's gone way beyond its boundaries, and how do they restore it? That was sort of the homework, if you will, from the meeting. Donald Trump took it. He took it fine. Took it meaning walked away with it. I don't mean take it as if it was some kind of threat, because that is not at all how the meeting went. But basically, Donald Trump said, you know, I'll take it under advisement, so to speak. That's code for I'll think about it. And they'll agree to meet again. You know, this is a bromance, folks. They've got to sort of start the dance. They've got to start the dating process, whatever you want to call it. It would be extremely odd if the Speaker of the House all of a sudden became madly in love with Donald Trump. It's got to be a slow process. And they both have to come back after two or three of these meetings and say, you know, we agreed on these core values. And then the party, I think, can start being unified. But I tell you what, listen to Harry Reid on the Senate floor talk about Donald Trump. This is about a minute. This is way over the top.
When they get together, they can talk about their policies about being anti-woman. Since Senator McConnell has so enthusiastically embraced Trump, we can only assume he agrees with Trump's view that women are dogs and pigs. We can only assume that Republican leader is not repulsed by Donald Trump's vulgar behavior towards women. Look at his New York Times story yesterday with his cavorting with Howard Stern and how they talked about women. At some point in their conversation, Donald Trump should thank the senior senator from Kentucky. Trump owes his candidacy to the Republican leader and the policies that he's led. It was an obstructionist, anti-woman, anti-Latino, anti-Muslim, anti-middle class, anti-environment, and anti-Obama, and anti-everything Republicans during the last 8 years have made Donald Trump a reality.
Wow. Boy, he just gave Mitch McConnell a big credit for something that I don't think Mitch McConnell did. But it was an opportunity for him to talk on the Senate floor about a presidential candidate and somehow make it senatorial sounding. I'm sure we're going to hear this over and over again. Remember when Senator Reid came on the floor and said he knows that Mitt Romney hasn't filed tax returns in 10 years? The guy sometimes can come up with the craziest crazy. It's Twilight Zone stuff sometimes. It really and truly is. All right, let's stay in the Senate for a minute. Senator Jeff Sessions. He is the Senate Judiciary Subcommittee Chair. He's a former prosecutor. He is warning people about Hillary Clinton, saying she will end constitutional law as we know it. He said this will be the end of law in America. He predicted that giving Democrats a majority would result in liberal legal changes driven by Supreme Court Justice Elena Kagan and Sonia Sotomayor. We have, quote, I'm quoting him, we have Kagan and Sotomayor on steroids and more. Quote, they believe they have the power to redefine the meaning of words from plain meaning, plain historical understandings, and make them say what they want and then can advance their agenda, which is the direct attack on the American people to set the agenda. He's exactly right. That's what the White House has been doing its whole time. And if the Democrats get the presidency and if they appoint even just one more justice, he is exactly right. Exactly right. He says in voting for Hillary Clinton, it's a very risky thing. I'm just amazed, quote, I'm quoting him again, how far we've gotten away from the fundamental principles of the law that words should be given the fair meaning they were intended. Once that happens, there is no order. So we'll see. Senator Sessions is issuing a warning sign. Be careful. Be careful what you vote for. Will the rule of law just sort of disappear? Okay, I do this at every airing of Congress College. Folks, get your paper, get your pencil out. We're going to listen to the president's daily schedule for today. At 9 o'clock, the president and the first lady welcomed the president of Finland and prime ministers of Norway, Sweden, Denmark, and Iceland. At 10:25, he held a multilateral meeting with the same. At 7 o'clock, he starts the photo op and all of that, the media pool, TV, and then at 7:30, he starts the press gathering, all for a state dinner tonight at 9 o'clock. That's it, folks. The president was basically with the president of Finland and prime ministers of Norway, Sweden, Denmark, and Iceland today. That's the extent of what our president did today. All right, I'm going to leave you with that. I will not be doing shows Monday or Friday of next week. I'll be traveling. I'm going to the belly of the beast. I'm going to Washington, D.C. I'm going to leave you with a fun one. I hadn't heard it in a long time. Motley Crue, Smoking in the Boys' Room. Because, you know, up until the bathroom issue, that was really the only bad thing that was going on in bathrooms. Smoking in the bathroom. Have fun, everybody. Have a blessed night.